And we're going to spotlight my video, so for the video feed, and then go up to where it says view in the top right-hand screen of the screen and go back to gallery. Okay. We're all good? All set? Okay, here's the journey. Let's jump in. What's going on here? Okay. All right. This is where we were up to more or less last week. Can everybody see the screen? I'm not sure it looks any different to you than it did in previous weeks. My monitor went on the little bit on the fritz, so I have to get it, had to get a new one. So it has a different size and layout, so I don't know if it looks any different, but nonetheless, it is what it is. All right. So last week we spent some time talking about this conversation between Ahima'atz ben Tzadok and Yoav. Ahima'atz wants to run and update David on the status of the war. He wants to be in what we identified here as the Mivaser, the one, the herald, the one to bring the news and information to the king. That's called technically called a herald. And Yoav says, no, not this day, not this time. And there's a whole conversation. In the end, he sends this the Cushite, and the Cushi runs ahead. And Ahima'atz finally pushes and pushes, and Yoav finally agrees. And he says, okay, go. And Yoav finds a shortcut. He goes down to the Kikar, and he finds a shortcut. And so he overruns the Cushi, and he gets to David first. David has a whole conversation with him about the war. He reports that the war we were victorious. David says, what about Avshalom? And well, first they see Ahima'atz from afar. That's part of the story. The Sofeh, this is conversation between the watchman and David, interjected in the story. He sees David from afar, and he says, who he sees Ahima'atz from afar, and he says, this must be Ahima'atz, and says, oh great, Ahima'atz, he must be bringing good tidings. And then of course he brings him very, on the one hand, good tidings, on the other hand, bad tidings, because when David pushes him about Avshalom, Shalom l'na'al Avshalom, then suddenly he gets tongue-tied, and he starts to equivocate, and he doesn't give him an answer. Lo yadati ma, I don't know what happened. And finally he says, you know what, let's hear from the Cushi. The Cushi comes, and the Cushi reports exactly what he saw. God has given avenged you of all your enemies. What about Avshalom? And he says exactly what he saw, which is, of course, that may all your enemies meet the end that Avshalom met. And that, of course, sets David off in Perek Yutet into a tailspin of mourning and despair because of the loss of Avshalom. So we had spent some time last week. That's more or less the story. We asked a couple of questions. One question we dealt with was the nature of the Mivaser. Why is there such an emphasis on the word Mivaser? Mivaser is not just a description of what the person did, but it was actually a kind of title, a kind of role that was play that the person had in the war, technically referred to as a herald. Vavasrat HaMelech, I will be the one to bring the news to the king. And Yoav says to him, "Hay ata hayom az lo ish b'sura ata hayom azo v'sarta b'yom acher. You are not going to be the herald today. Somebody else will be that herald. V'hayom azo lo tevaser, not today. Ki al kein ben hamelech met, for the king's son is dead, and that's not news I want you to bring to the king." So he turns to the Cushi and he says, "You go." So the first thing we understood is that the word mevaser, and we looked at this in a couple of places in Tanakh, actually has the notion of mevaser by itself can be a mevaser of good news and a mevaser of bad news. The herald can be bringing good tidings and can be bringing bad tidings. The examples that we saw in the case of David in previous instances were moments when the mevaser came to tell David about the death of Shaul, although the person there had a hand in the killing of Shaul or in the final steps of that, and David didn't like that, so David had him executed for treason against the king. And then you have the story of Ishbosheth again, where they bring the head of Ishbosheth to David, saying to him, "Oh, you see, the war is over. You won." And they telling these Givonim who brought him the news were the ones who actually killed Ishbosheth, and David had them executed for treason again. So the track record of David in terms of how he treats the herald isn't great. Nonetheless, Ahimaaz wants to take on that role. Somebody suggested this morning that maybe that's why Yoav is hesitant to send Ahimaaz, because he doesn't want to let anything happen to Ahimaaz. Whereas the Cushi, you'll forgive me, in the context of a low-ranking soldier in the army, is quote unquote expendable. I don't think that's the issue here. I think the issue is much more significant, but that raises the question why he doesn't want to send Ahimaaz. Clearly, he wants the news to be framed in a certain way, and he doesn't want David to react the way David does. The question that we left off with the end of the shiur last week is why? What does it matter who the Mivaser is? Right? Why is it so significant to Yoav in particular that the Mivaser be Ahimaaz, sorry, not be Ahimaaz, but in fact be this unnamed servant by the name of, or identified only by his nationality? Right? Why is that not? What's playing out in Yoav's mind when he doesn't want to send Ahimaaz? And that's more or less where I think we left off, correct? We're good? Yes, that was the question we left off at the end of the week. So I think the emphasis here, and if you look at the text, it clearly focuses on the role of Ahimaaz per se. If you look at David's, if you look at Yoav's reaction, Ahimaaz ben Tzadok amar rutzenav avasrat hamelach, I want to run to tell the king, and the message being kishvato Hashem yad levav, God has avenged him of his enemies. Yoav's response is lo ish besorah ata hayom hazeh. You are not going to be the bearer of this news today. In other words, what is concerning to Yoav is not that the news doesn't get to David, but that Ahimaaz not be the one to deliver that message. You are not going to deliver that message today. And instead, the message will get there. I'm going to turn to the Cushi and he says, you go. And Ahimaaz certainly knows that he turned to somebody else because he says, Arutza, right? Let me run as well. And Yoav again stubbornly says, "Lo lama ze ata ratz b'ni? Why do you want to run, my son? Lecha ein b'sura motzeit. There's no reward for this news. This is not for you." And he wants to go anyway. Finally, Yoav says, "Okay, you want to go? Go." And of course, Ahimaaz goes. But why is there such an emphasis on the question of who is the herald, rather than on the question of what news the herald brings? That's the question that I wanted to explore. I think they're interconnected. I think they're interconnected. And the first thing we need to understand, essentially, is that Yoav, more than anybody else in this in the army, Yoav, as the general closest to David, closest in terms of the longest standing relationship with David. And also, Yoav has been there with David from the very beginning. Yoav knows David's inner mind. Nobody knows David as well as Yoav does. That has sometimes come back to bite David. But if you remember back in chapter 3, he wants to get rid of David and he can't, get rid of Yoav and he can't because Yoav is very powerful, very strong. He's his nephew. Yoav is a very unique relationship with David. But Yoav also understands that at stake here is how David is going to take the news, ki al ken ben ha-melech met, that in fact Avshalom has died. And you see from the end of the parak that that's clearly the primary piece of the information that concerns David. Over and over again, he says to David, he says, Shalom lenar Avshalom. What about Avshalom? Hashalom lenar Avshalom? He asks the question twice. And in chapter 19, when he hears the news that it's that Avshalom has died, he starts to in chapter 19, I just jumped for a moment, right? You can see how much it disturbs the king. Ve'igaz ha-melech. He was moved, he was disturbed, he was upset. And he goes upstairs and he goes to his attic and he begins to cry and he begins to wail, B'ni Avshalom, B'ni, B'ni Avshalom, mi yuten mutid, ani tachtecha Avshalom, B'ni, B'ni, would that I could have died instead of you, my son, Avshalom, my son, my son. Over and over again, this is, and Yoav is, we'll see Yoav's role in that, how he reacts to it, but clearly this is what David is, what Yoav is afraid of, how David is going to take the news. Why is there a variable here, right? David is going to take the news poorly. Right? Why is there even a variable? So I think the variable has to do with how you frame the message to David. And there are two possibilities, right? You can either frame the message to David as Yoav had intended, which is what? Which is, okay, if you're going to send the message, you're going to send the herald to David, David is going to learn from the messenger that Avshalom died. What is the better outcome? What is the better way to frame it that Yoav, for Yoav's intention? Right? Yoav's intention is, right, what would he have said? If Yoav was standing before David, what would Yoav have said to David? If Yoav was standing before David, what would Yoav have said to David? What do you think?
We won, but Avshalom died, unfortunately.
We won, but Avshalom died. Okay. That's more or less what they said. So why is that different? Well, how would that enable David to react differently? Right? What else could have Yoav have said that would have at least helped frame the news for David in a way that was more palatable for David? Remember, who killed Avshalom in the end? Right? It was Yoav himself who killed Avshalom in direct contravention of David's orders. Why? Why did he do it? So we already established that he did it because he felt that they had no choice. The forest was consuming the people between the animals and the darkness and the lack of clarity and whose troops are fighting whom, etc. Right? The forest was the prime culprit in this event. We saw this back in the earlier part of the parak, right? In pasuk chet, vayerev haya'ar le'achol ba'am asher achla acherev. The forest devoured more people than did the sword. And Yoav understood that's the primary reason why Yoav went and killed Avshalom, because he knew that he couldn't let the war continue. There were too many casualties. This war had taken a very dark turn, and it was not intended that way. And in the end, if you didn't end the war quickly, it would have spiraled out of control. That's exactly what Avshalom, what Yoav understood. But that's also what Yoav wanted to convey to David. This was a forest. This was a forest area for the war. This was going badly. There were troops that were being killed. There were 20,000 people who died. The forest was consuming more people than the sword. There was no choice but to end this war as quickly as possible. And the only way to do that was to take down Avshalom. Nebuch Avshalom died. We had no choice. Avshalom died. We emerged victorious, but more than that, we saved the army of Israel from a terrible calamity by enabling this to end quickly. Option one. Option two. What else could the message? How else could the message been given to David in a way that would have gone badly? Right. Option two is David, Mazel Tov. We won the war. Avshalom is dead. Long live the king. Avshalom, that no goodnik, that rebel, that perpetrator of terrible crimes, both against the wives of the kingdom and against the king. He led a whole rebellion. He was treasonous. That no goodnik, he's gone and done for. We are now able to restore David to the throne of Israel. Two options. Option one, Nebuchadnezzar. the war was going badly. We had no choice. The forest was consuming. There was no way to end this war quickly other than to take down Avshalom. Option two, Chag Sameach. They tried to kill us. We won. Let's eat. Classic definition of a holiday. Mazel tov. Avshalom is dead. David, you can return to the throne. Of the two, clearly Yoav opted for the first. So why does it matter who the herald is to bring that news? So the answer to that is clearly articulated by David himself. If you go down a little bit further in the story to where David and the watchmen are having a conversation, they see the herald coming from afar. The first he sees a person running by himself. And so David says, if he's running by himself, he's coming as a herald. Im levado b'sura b'fiv. He has news. Fine. Then he sees another person, and he says he's also a herald. Then he says to the tzofeh says, I see the first one running, because remember Achimat passed him. I see the first one running, and he looks like the gate of Achimat ben Sadok. David's reaction, Vayomer HaMelech, Ish tov zeh, ve'el b'sorat tavo yavo. Because he's a good man, because he knows him, because Achimatz wouldn't be coming to bring me news unless it was good news. Bad news anybody can deliver. Bad news anybody can deliver. Good news is sent with special pomp and ceremony. Good news is sent with victory charm, right? With the victory dance. Good news is a whole band of people coming and celebrating the victory of the army. Good news is besorah tova, especially when the general is waiting for news on the front, and he doesn't know what to expect, and his marching into the camp is one of the special VIPs. Okay, then you know that things are going well. Whereas in walks some cushy off the battlefield, you don't know what to expect. And that's exactly why Yoav doesn't want to send Achimatz, because he doesn't want Achimatz to be the one that David sees from afar. David just doesn't even have the conversation with him, he just has to see him. But the moment he sees him, he realizes that this is Achimatz. Oh, then he's certainly going to be bringing good tidings. And that's exactly what Yoav wants to avoid. Because a good tiding, a good news, means that we won and let's celebrate. And that's precisely what Achimatz wanted to do. Remember, go back to the initial suggestion. Pasuk Yutet, V'Achimatz ben Tzadok amar, Arutzana, V'Avasrat HaMelech, Kishvato Hashem Miyad Oivav. That's exactly what Achimatz wants to do. I want to run and tell the good news to the king. God has avenged him of his enemies. And that's precisely what Yoav doesn't want to let him say. Those are the words, that's the attitude, the context, the emotion of it that Yoav wants to avoid exposing to David. Because for David, he's going to hear it, he's going to see it in exactly the opposite way. And nobody knows that better than David. They're better than Yoav.
So why doesn't he just tell him to please? Just by seeing him, he would just assume.
Seeing him. Achimatz is, it's I'm the sorry. Kind of message You're you right. have to frame, not in terms of the words you say, but in terms of the impression you give. Achimatz. Right. Achimatz is a Kohen. Achimatz is a person of stature. He's a person of significance. That I think is the key. What Achimatz, what Yoav doesn't realize, right? Achimatz insists after he sends the Kushi, Achimatz gets stubborn, and Achimatz says, "I want to go anyway." Right, Yosef, I also want to go. I'll go after the Kushi. And Yoav says, why do you want to go? Why do you want to, I don't want to send you. Ulechaim b'sorah motzeit, this is not going to be successful. And he says, I want to go anyway. And there's this whole conversation that goes on, and he pushes. I don't know how long this conversation takes place. I suspect that the conversation is longer and more drawn out than we have in two psukim in the text. I suspect that it was over the course of time. And in the end, finally, Yoav agrees. Why? So, again, I'm conjecturing, but it's a reasonable conjecture. If he doesn't want to send the chimatz, because he doesn't want David to see a chimatz, and he sends the Cushi, if you wait long enough, the Cushi will get there first. And David will hear the frame of the conversation in the context of a man who comes from the front, who looks like he came from a very bad place. Whereas Achimatz was in the Kohen, I don't even know if Achimatz was in the field. Achimatz is the Kohen. So he allows him to go in the end, and he says, "Vayomer lo rutz, if that's where you want to go, go." But I suspect Yoav was playing for time. Delay Achimatz enough to allow the Cushi to arrive first. But what Yoav doesn't anticipate is what happens next, which is that Vayaratz Achimatz derech hakikar ve'avorat hakushi. Achimatz doesn't really process what's in Yoav's mind. To him, it's all about getting to David first, to be the one, to be Zocha, to give David the good news. And so he runs down to Kikar Yarden, and he runs along the plain instead of through the forest, and so he ends up coming to David first. And that's what happens. When David sees him, he sees Achimatz first, even though the Cushi was sent first. And so his reaction is, right, he's standing there, he's waiting for this person to come, he's waiting for this herald to show up, and as the Achimatz ends up coming into the palace, he says to him, David says to the Tzofer, he must have good news. And so in David's mind, he's already framed a picture of what the news in the front is. And it starts with Mazel Tov. It starts with good news. It starts with a positive message, except that for Yoav, for Achimatz, the positive message is we won. And for David, the positive message would be Avshalom is well and, you know, all is well. That's the anticipation. What happens? Achimatz walks in. And he doesn't take three steps into the palace before he looks David in the eye. Vayomer el ha-melech shalom. He hasn't even bowed down yet. And he bows down in the end, in the second half of the verse, which is also an oddity. Normally you bow down first and then you speak. But he just blurts out to the king, shalom. Vayishtachu le-melech. And he bows to the king, pav arza. And he looks at David in the eye. And the moment he looks David in the eye, he realizes that what Yoav's anticipation is different. Sorry, what Achimatz's message is different from David's anticipation. And the original message of Kishvato Hashem Yadoi Vav, that God has avenged him of his enemies, that was the message that Achimatz had suggested, is not the message he ends up giving him. That's the message the Cushi will deliver. God has avenged you of all who come against, of who have risen up against you. That was Achimatz's original language, right? In Pasuk Yutet, that was exactly what he had said. Achimatz ben Tzadok amar, God has avenged him of his enemies. But that's not what he delivers. What he delivers is a completely different message. Vayomer. Baruch Hashem Elokecha, Asher Sigar et Anashim Asher Nasu et Yadam, Adoni HaMelech, God has delivered the men who have lifted up your hands. What's the difference between avenged you of your enemies and delivered the people who rose against you back into your hands? It's a very different tone. Sigar et Anashim means He's delivered them. He's given them to you. He's extradited them to you. He's provided them to you, meaning captured them, put them in jail, right? Anything. It doesn't say anything. It just says God has delivered them to you. Sagarat and Hashem Eile. And these are people who rose their hands against the king. Asher nesu et yadam v'adoni ha-melech. Why does he change the language? I think he changes the language because he realizes on David's face, now he's in a difficult position. It's exactly what Yoav wanted to avoid. And when David confronts him, Shalom lenahar l'Avshalom. Okay, that's all fine and good, but what about Avshalom? Achimaatz's reaction is tongue-tied. And he literally starts to articulate a sentence. He literally starts to get tongue-tied. I saw a great multitude, ra'iti ha'amon ha'gadol, lishloach et eved ha'melech Yoav et avdecha, to send your servant and the servant of Yoav, which is the Cushi, and your servant, meaning me, lo yadati ma, I didn't know what the tumult was. He gets tongue-tied. So the king is already suspicious, and he says, "Sovit yetsevko, you've said your piece. Go stand over the side. I want to hear what the Cushi has to say." V'inei Cushi ba v'yomer Cushi v'itbaser adoni ha'melech kishvatcha Hashem hayom miyad kol ha'kamim alecha. What's the news? The news is that God has avenged you of all your enemies. And what about Avshalom? Oh, Avshalom, he's got the worst. You cannot, Adoni HaMelech, Chol HaShekamu Alecha L'Ra'a, may all your enemies suffer the fate of Avshalom. Oh, that's the mazel tov. Avshalom is dead. Long live the king. Right? You cannot, let all the enemies meet the same end as Avshalom did. Which is the normal message you would give to the king if Avshalom had been just a regular rebel and not David's son. And at that point, the story changes. But you understand that so much of this has to do with the context of the message, not just the message itself. What was David expecting, and what was that moment when they showed up? David was the whole question of how do you frame the bad news? Do you frame it as bad news, which is what Avshalom want, what David want, was trying to, what Yoav was trying to do, or do you frame it as good news because the war was won? And that's what fails. So then I hope that's an attempt to resolve the question we left off with last week, which is what happened. Why is it so important as to who Yoav sends? And then, as time goes on, the next part of the story, David reacts the way he reacts, and suddenly it's clear that neither Achimaatz, nor the Cushi, nor the people of Israel are talking to the king. Right? They're not talking to David HaMelech. Who are they talking to? They're talking to the father of Avshalom. They're talking to a father who's just lost his son. In other words, the question here revolves around what's the context of David in this story? David goes up to the attic and he begins to cry. Would that I could have died in your stead, my son Avshalom. David, in a sense, received a double message, right? On the one hand, he hears that his son is Avshalom has died. And on the other hand, he's also heard that there's a celebration around it, right? He's felt the joy of the people that the victory is over. So much of this effort has been, from David's perspective, has been to frame Avshalom not as a rebel, but as a kind of an internal family conflict. and to avoid the message that Avshalom is a rebel, right? That was put to bed. The moment the Cushi's response was, you can now, Oveh Adoni HaMelech, they understood that they all saw Avshalom as the enemy. They saw Avshalom as the enemy. That's exactly what David didn't want. And so that double message that on one hand Avshalom has died, on the other hand Avshalom was perceived as an enemy of David, right? That makes it almost unbearable. So let's look a little bit further down in Perek Yeted. Vayugad li Yoav, ichne melech boche. Yoav is told, right? By this point in time, Yoav is already, next chapter, Yoav has already come back to the camp together with the rest of the soldiers. And Yoav begins to hear that the king is crying, vayitabel al Avshalom, and mourning for Avshalom. At this point, the shift is not to how David reacts, but to how the people react. What is the impact of David's mourning on the morale of the soldiers who come back from the war? That victory was turned into mourning for all the people. For the people heard that day, what are the people here? Instead of celebrating the victory of the battle and the restoration of the unity of the king of Israel, what they all they saw was the king grieving for his son. Right? They saw the father losing his son, but they didn't see the king leading an army and subverting a rebellion that would have destroyed the kingdom. Not only that, the people literally, the soldiers, literally had to steal back into the city like in the middle of the night. As people that are ashamed, who steal away when they flee the battlefield. They came back shamed. They came back feeling like their entire victory had been stolen from them. I don't know if you're familiar with the story of the war veterans who came back from the war of Vietnam. Right? The tragedy of the veterans who came back from Vietnam was that Vietnam went on for 10 years. Right? When they came back from Vietnam, they were the brunt of the frustration of the country that had lost all its enthusiasm for the war, that's put it mildly, about the war. Right? They came back almost as war criminals. And there's actually a very interesting website I found in the History Channel that actually talks about exactly the difference between the Vietnam War vets that were treated poorly when they returned and comparing it to the veterans from World War II. It's a worthwhile video clip. It's about 5 minutes. Worthwhile video clip looking at as to why World War II veterans and Vietnam veterans were treated so differently. But it all has to do with how the people perceived the war. And the veterans, the soldiers who came back from battle, and the time that the attitudes had changed so dramatically that they were, there was no welcome home parades. There was no welcoming to the veterans. They were literally spat on and considered and mistreated as if they were guilty of perpetrating the crime of the war of Vietnam. Anyway, it's an interesting website. You can take a look at it. But that's exactly what's going on here. V'itkanev ha'am b'yom mahu l'avo ha'ir. V'tiya tshuva b'yom mahu l'evel. The victory had been turned into mourning. Now, if you look in Tanakh, think through for a moment all of the examples that we have studied or that you are familiar with of moments of great victory. What was the classic biblical response to a victory in battle? Classic Tanakh response is a parade, a song, greeting with song, and when David and Shaul came back from the battles against the Plishtim, They were greeted by the women singing, right? Okay, that song caused a little bit of a discomfort between Avshalom and David, but essentially it was a song of Shaul and David. But essentially it was a song of victory. Shaul by the thousands, David by the tens of thousands, right? They came back to a parade. Even Miriam's song, Shirat Hayam, which we read yesterday or 2 days ago in Shul, right? Even Shirat Hayam is a song of victory. Moshe's song of victory, Miriam's song of victory, Shiri Lashem ki go'o ga'asus v'rachwara mavayam. It's a victory over our enemies. David and Shaul, Devorah and Barak go to war against Sisera. When it's all over, what does Devorah do? She sings a song. Shirat Devorah. David, similarly, at the end of Sefer Shmuel, we'll learn about Shirat David. Even Bat Yiftach, right? The story of Yiftach comes back from battle and his daughter comes out to greet him also with song and dancing, etc. That ended up with a tragedy, but you understand the pattern. In Tanakh, the greatest dignity and reward you can give to the officers who just put their lives on the line for you are to parade them, is to thank them, is to sing to them, is to recognize their heroism. And instead, these soldiers who have just literally fought a massive battle on David's behalf come back into the palace like they're stealing back as if they're ashamed to show their face. And Vatia Chua Bayamu Evil Lecholaam, literally as if they are coming back to defeat instead of victory. And then they're told the Melech La'atat Panav, the king has covered his face, which is a sign of mourning. One of the classic examples of mourning was to cover their face. Vayizak Melech Kol Gadol, crying out with a great voice, Bini Avshalom, Avshalom, Bini, Bini. And that's really the tragic moment when they realize that they're not talking to David the king, they're talking to the father of Avshalom who has lost his son. Now, I want to be very clear. I totally appreciate the depth of the tragedy that David faces losing his son. Cannot overstate that tragedy. But David also is the general. David also is the king. David also is the leader. And there are times, especially in battle, when you have to be able to separate your identity as a father and your identity as a soldier or as a general or as a leader or as a king. And that's so critical for David at this moment. And that's what he can't do. Right. Even in the current war in Gaza, we have had major personalities of military personalities who have lost their children to the fight against Hamas. General Eisenkot, in particular, I'm thinking of in my head right now. But the reactions, both grieving, but also heroic in the sense that they understood that we're in the middle of the war. And you have to put that into context of what's going on. That's what David can't do, because for David at this moment, he's not David HaMelech. He is David, father of Avshalom, and that's all he can think about, Avshalom Bini Bini. And the one to figuratively or metaphorically slap him across the face and bring him back to reality is Yoav. And that's what happens next. Vayavo Yoav al HaMelech HaBayit. Yoav comes to the palace, to the house, Vayomer, and he says to the king, he says to David. Now, you have to listen, you have to hear the tone of Yoav's rebuke of David.
So can I just ask my question again? I'm so sorry. I guess my question, I didn't state it incorrectly. Surely one would think or have the sensitivity to know that when you first tell a parent, a father, a mother, that their son is killed, you'd have the sensitivity, and the messenger would have had the sensitivity to know that his first reaction would be like devastation. It takes a little bit of processing to come to the point of having your mind rule over your heart.
Yeah, I hear you on the one hand. On the other hand, we're not just talking about a father and a son. We're talking about a son who is a traitor of the state, who's led the people in rebellion against the king, and who is responsible for the causing of all of this trouble. Remember, it's David who ran from Yerushalayim and gave the kingdom over to Avshalom. It's Avshalom mm-hmm. who took David's wives and slept with them on the rooftop of the palace of Pilatshim al-Agad. Right? Mm-hmm. It's Avshalom who led the people into battles. Avshalom was looking to kill David. So mm-hmm. from the perspective of the people, Avshalom is a traitor and should be treated as a traitor. He should be treated as an enemy of the state. Nobody understands why David has this reaction the way that he does. In fact, it's probably the least appropriate reaction because, as Yoav is going to point out, Avshalom is a traitor. And to the eyes of the people, that's what they saw. Now, that may be what David didn't want to convey, but that's a reality. And that's exactly the reality that Yoav says, you can't ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, as you read Yoav's reaction, you see that in his words.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
You have shamed the faces of all of your servants today. They saved your life today. And the lives of your sons and your daughters. And the lives of your wives and the lives of your concubines. Remember those who left in Yerushalayim, who Avshalom took? You have shamed them all. These people who went to war to save your life, and you have shamed them, and you have shamed your family, and you have shamed your wives. To love those that hate you, Avshalom, and to hate those that love you, all your servants who have given their lives, put their lives on the line for you. You have, translated here as declared, but I think here it means to demonstrate, right? You have demonstrated in your actions, in your availas, in your mourning, as if you have no princes and servants, right? You have no officers, you have no army. Now I see. Now I understand. If Avshalom had lived and all of us had perished, that would have been fine for you. Ve'ata, says Yoav to David. Now, kum, say, get out there. Go speak to the heart of your servants, of your people. Go be the king you are supposed to be. Go put your mantle of your crown back on your head. And there's this paragraph pause in the middle of the pasuk, and then he threatens him, and says, "Ki b'Hashem nishbati, I swear by God, ki incha yotzei, if you don't go out, im yelin ish itcha halayla, there will be no man who will remain with you tonight. They will all abandon you." This will be worse for you than any evil that has befallen you from your youth to today. That's what he says to those are, well, what's the old expression? Them's fighting words, right? That's what he says to. He says, that's not a king. You're not behaving like a king. What did you forget about their soldiers and arms? You forget about your soldiers in the battlefield? You forget about all the people who risked their lives for you? You forgot about all the people who fought for you? What happened to the victory parade? What happened to the, to borrow the metaphor, snatch defeat out of the jaws of victory? And you literally took an entire army that went to war for you and to restore your kingdom and to restore your crown, and you turned it into your personal mourning for Avshalom. How do you think they're going to feel? Only Yoav can speak to David this way. It's fascinating. Only Yoav can speak to David this way.
Did David HaMelech ever find out that he killed?
Oh, for sure he knew he killed him. I have no doubt. First of all, it wasn't private. It wasn't the secret. It was very public. And that's essentially what he says to him here. Shalom is a traitor. And I get all of the la'at li la'na'ar lav shalom, spare my child, spare the na'ar av shalom. He calls him a na'ar. It's interesting, he calls him a na'ar. Shalom is a grown man. Shalom has children. Shalom has children who have died. Shalom has wives, has a family. Shalom is not a child. And yet David calls him twice. He calls him a na'ar, three times. If you go back to the beginning of Perek Yerchet, when they first go to war, David's instructions to the people, and he says it publicly, in Pasuk K, he says, La'atli lena'ar la'av shalom. Deal gently with the young man of shalom. Lena'ar. Lena'ar is a term of endearment. If you call an adult a na'ar, you call my child, av shalom ala, my little av shalom, my sweet av shalom. This is a man who's literally a traitor to the king, to the crown. Oh, my sweet little Avshalom, don't hurt him. And at the end, twice, when he poses the question to the Mivaser, once to Achimatz and once to the Cushi, he says, "Avshalom la na'ar la Avshalom." Right? This is David. This is the emotion of David coming out, and Yoav says to him, "You can't do that. This is a person who's committed treason, who's led the people into war, who's responsible for the death of tens of thousands." These little paragraph pauses are very interesting. You know, in Ve'atakum Tzeved Daber Lev Avadecha, there's a pause, there's a samach, meaning there's a paragraph pause in the middle of the pasuk, and you wait and you hear his response. And then again in Pasuk Tet, there's this paragraph pause, the samach. And the Yaakov Melech Vayeshev Bashar, king goes back and he sits at the gate. Ulechol ha'am egidu lemor. Now, what does it mean the king went and sat by the gate? It means that he put aside his mourning. He took off his torn cloak of avelus. He put on his garments of the king, and he went to sit at the gate. And he went to greet his troops as they came back from battle, because that's what a king does. He goes to the gate and he greets the troops as they come back. And that's what the people saw. L'chol la'am egidu lemor, hinei ha'melech yoshev b'shar. Behold, the king is at the gate. Ve'yavoko la'am lifnei ha'melech. And the people came before the king, and they greeted the king, and the king greeted them, as the rest of the army, v'yisrael nas ish lo alav, as the rest of the army of Israel fled to his tent. Right? That's the moment of victory. The victorious army is coming back, and David is greeting them. And that's how it should be. But you get a sense of how much David has to be pushed to play the role of the king. And that's very important for us, because ultimately the question, if I look at the sequence of these all of these chapters, when the story ends in Parakaf, so there's only another chapter and a half left, but in all of these chapters, right, this is all the aftermath of David and Bathsheba, and David's reaction to that is he leaves the throne. He abandons the throne. He leaves the throne to Avshalom. He leaves the kingdom because he perceives that as part of his punishment from God, that he should be removed from the throne, and he does. And only by God's mercy does he actually end up returning to the throne long enough to bear a son for Bathsheba and to actually have that son become the heir to the throne. And we talked about Shlomo named after Avshalom. But at the point that he leaves Yerushalayim, he has no anticipation that he's going to return to Yerushalayim. And for all intents and purposes, he returns to Yerushalayim. I'm actually going to stop sharing because I want to conclude this piece. For all intents and purposes, he returns to Yerushalayim as a person, as a father, but not as king. He does not return to Yerushalayim. Yes, in name he returns to the throne, But in terms of the role of leadership, the leadership mandate, the behavior of a leader, the behavior of a king, David is a very different person. And he never really returns to that role. He really is removed from the throne permanently. He returns physically, but not emotionally. And that's where the story is going to end in the next chapter. The story is going to end as soon as he gets back to Yerushalayim. That's the end of Sefer Shmuel. There's four more chapters after it, but they're postscripts, they're appendixes, they're much earlier events. Right? The story of David in Sefer Shmuel ends when he returns physically to Yerushalayim. Then, for all intents and purposes, we can jump from there to the beginning of Sefer Malachim, the Book of Kings, where David is on his deathbed. Because from the perspective of leadership of David, we basically have the trajectory, everything up until the story of Bathsheba. And then after Bathsheba, there's a unit, there's a single story that's comprised of the rebellion of Amnon, the story of Amnon and Tamar, the rebellion of the murder of Amnon by Avshalom, Avshalom's fleeing, Avshalom's returning, Avshalom's rebellion, the war with Avshalom, and David returns to Yerushalayim. And the events that are still to unfold in the remaining chapter and a half are not good stories for David. They're one mistake after another. David is going to make a series of tragic mistakes on his way back to Yerushalayim. He's going to favor one tribe over another, and he's going to create a rift amongst the people, and he's going to deal with Mephibosheth incorrectly, and he's going to deal with, there's a rebellion of Sheva ben Bichri coming around the corner, and that rebellion is even worse than the rebellion of Shimei ben Gera. This is all of the seeds of the split of the kingdom that will take place later, years later, in the time of Rechavam and Yeravam and Nevat. Those seeds are sown here. And that's the tragedy of the story of Bathsheba, right? We're still dealing with its aftermath even till this moment. Not hard to see in a moment of a weak king who emerges as a strong personality. Yoav. Right? Yoav is the general who recognizes that fault, that moment of weakness. Yoav sets him straight. Yoav places him back on the throne. Yoav is a very strong individual. But Yoav will also make mistakes, right? Yoav is not... Yoav is going to make a tragic mistake. He's already guilty for the death of Avner, and he's going to be guilty of the death of the next general that David tries to put in to replace him. That is yet to come. So that is where we are up to. Questions? Questions, observations? All right. Then what I'm going to do is... I think we're going to stop here, because if I look at the rest of the perek, I know we're a little early, but if I look at the rest of the perek, the rest of the story is already a new conversation, new discussion. Now it's David returning to Yerushalayim and all of the events that take place along the way. It's the conversation between the tribes of Israel and the tribes of Judah. There is the conversation with Amasa ben Yeter. There is the story of Shimon ben Gera, the story of Sheva ben Bichri. So all of these stories are yet to come. I think we're going to... I don't really have the framework to start we would really just end up reading the chapter without being able to do much with it. So what I'm going to suggest is let's stop here, and we will start from a new topic and a new right, sort of a whole new unit, Bezrat Hashem, next week. Okay, any questions? Yeah. Orly, you had a question? No, all good.
I was just going to say thank you. And
go. No problem. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you for listening. And we will see you all next week.
Thank you.